Are those two things actually opposites?
Yeah.
A sexy baby. The opposite is not a monster on a hill because we haven't placed the location of the sexy baby.
Oh, I well, my mind just imagined all of them in a valley underneath the hill, all having a good time and being sexy.
So the sexy baby is at the bottom of the hill by the river?
No. Many, many sexy babies.
Oh, yes. That's true.
Yes. Multiple sexy babies. Having a party.
So the opposite of a horde of sexy babies is one monster on a hill.
Yeah, I can see it. What can I say?
I think this is probably the worst lyric that's ever been written. Hello, and welcome to Poor Unfortunate Podcast. I'm Connor Perkins.
And I'm Caroline A. Meddy. Happy Halloween, Connor.
Happy Halloween, Caroline. Mm. Welcome to any existing listeners. It's great having you here with us again. And to all of you new folks, happy Halloween. Welcome to Poor Unfortunate Podcast. It's great having you here with us. If you haven't yet already, please hit follow and subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast so all of our episodes download to your device. You don't miss out on anything. And if you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating and a review so other people can see your thoughts. We're seen in search results, all kinds of stuff, and just so that we get some feedback on the podcast because we love feedback, and it's always nice to know that we aren't doing this into a bottomless void. So, yeah, thank you for doing that. So, Caroline, what's new?
Well, honestly, you've told me what's new, so I just want to say these updates have been provided by Connor to me, just keeping me abreast of what's going on right now. So let's kick it off with some park stuff, shall we? So Blizzard Beach in Walt Disney World is finally going to reopen in November with some small Frozen theming additions. And I think Connor and I both agree that it should just be a full-fledged Frozen water park. But
they should just... I don't think I've ever said it on the podcast, but I was like... I've said it privately. I was like, they should just completely redo Blizzard Beach as Frozen. Give Frozen an entire park, basically.
It'd be so exciting. Yeah.
And it works so well because it's Frozen, but in summer. And that's literally what Frozen is. It's like everything's frozen over, but it's the summertime. You've got the whole like ski chalet sort of situation that's very like... Norwegian,
they should have just overhauled
like Swedish
it in this time.
Kind of thing happening.
Yeah,
it just works so well.
Yeah,
I was really excited to see this change. Now I think it's really only in the kiddie area.
Yeah,
is
I
where
know.
They added like the Snuggies and like Olaf and everything. But
more,
I'll take it. And they could do more. This is one of the instances where I'm like, you could do more.
Yeah,
don't touch Typhoon Lagoon. Typhoon Lagoon is perfect.
Leave that as it is.
Like,
because that has a perfect narrative.
Like,
this is
Blizzard Beach always felt to me as like a sort of. I didn't know what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. And I didn't have as much fun at Blizzard Beach as I did at Typhoon Lagoon.
Yeah, I agree,
actually. And
it feels
like adding Frozen, adding a property might actually benefit giving it some
sort of
story.
If someone said to me, Frozen water park, I'm sold. I mean, it's that easy. Yeah.
Like, this could be, you know, the characters from Frozen decided to open up a ski resort.
Oh my God.
In the middle of summer.
With the help of Oaken. Yeah, please.
Yeah, with the help of Oaken and Elsa. Like, you could, like, just make that the story. Like, this is the Arendelle ski resort.
Oh my God.
They're trying to keep it open all year round.
Oh, send me there. I guess also in terms of reopenings, in Disney World, Akershus is finally going to be reopening in the Norway Pavilion with all of the princesses. Yep. So that's
there
a very hidden gem. If you are trying to have a character breakfast, that's a little bit of a hidden gem. So go
there.
You
can also do a character dinner there. Which I have done. And it was really nice.
Yeah, I did the breakfast.
That's where I met the Anti-Belle.
Right. Anti-Belle.
Who I don't speak of.
Right. And I feel like every episode we've got another sad, sad Disney Parks money update. So
this one is too much.
So starting in 2023, we're going to have Disney Parks After Hours, giving you 3 extra hours at night in Magic Kingdom or Hollywood Studios on select nights. And Connor was looking through the prices for this. And one night
I clicked on a random date just to like see what it was. Mm-hmm. It was $129. So it's like another 3 hours
day.
In a park.
It's like enough three hours you pay the price of like a full day in the parks.
A full day ticket to have reduced crowds. And it's not even like you get to go in and like all the food is free.
Right, exactly.
Like,
there's
like
no extra feature in this. It's just
no, it's just that there's
continuing
no
to be
lines.
Allowed to be in there. Oh my gosh. Did you catch by any chance what the hours, what the timing is on those? Like, what time is that happening?
I think it would be like the park closes at like 9.
Okay.
Because
I was like,
there until midnight.
Because here I was being like, are they going to start kicking people out of the parks for this? Like, because then I would, all right, fine.
No, but like, if they have a park that like, they're like, this day of the week, we're going to close the park at 8 p.m., like, they could do that if they want. Like, they can do whatever they want now at this point.
I know.
Like, it's,
I know.
It's not good.
No. It's just starting to like feel like a joke.
It really is. It really is. And it's pissing me the hell off.
Yeah. Well, we'll have more for you. Honestly, in a very short time. Time is flying. Connor will be going in December and we'll have some more, you know, on the ground insights for y'all.
I have to do my dining reservations tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. OK, so come back next episode and, you know, give us a preview. I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you. That's what we have for parks. Why don't you, Connor, give us a little bit about some Disney Plus happenings?
Yeah. So on Disney Plus, there's some great stuff that's happening. So the Willow series is getting ready to come out on November 30th. Mm. I've said this before. I'm really excited about that. Also on Disney Plus, I just watched the Marvel special presentation of Werewolf by Night, which was so freaking amazing.
Oh.
It's so good. The stuff happening in Marvel TV right now is some of my favorite things that Marvel has ever done. Between She-Hulk, WandaVision, Loki, this special presentation. It's just so good. But like Werewolf by Night, we're getting another Marvel special presentation at Christmas time. It was announced we're getting Guardians of the Galaxy, the Christmas special.
Wow.
Where Mantis and Drax have to go back to Earth and find like the perfect Christmas present for Peter Quill. And I'm like, this,
cute.
I'm here for this.
So
I'm sold.
Cute.
Like, this is working. I'm going to watch this.
Oh, but tell them about the Christmas special. I didn't know until you told me about this, about the next one. I can't even, my little heart.
They've also announced that there's going to be another Christmas special. It'll be on Disney Plus on November 28th, but it's premiering on November 27th, simultaneously on ABC, Disney Channel, I think Freeform, all of the Disney-owned channels. And it is a stop-motion animated Christmas special starring Mickey Mouse in this, you know, sort of style of like a Rankin Bass.
Oh my gosh.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, I need that.
I looked at the image of it already. It looks
so sweet,
really good.
Looking.
So I'm going to watch the frick out of that.
I need that to destroy me the same way that Olaf's Frozen Adventure destroyed me.
You know, and I feel like it's going to be a good time. Like, it just looks so wholesome
it
and
does.
Good.
It
and
does. Like, the way that he looked in that little outfit. Ooh.
He looks so cute.
So
it was
sweet.
Oh God,
cute.
It was so good.
Yeah.
So that's happening. Other Disney Plus news, though, this was a pretty big win for Disney Plus, but it was just announced that Doctor Who.
I thought I was seeing things when I first saw that announcement.
Will be on Disney Plus. Like, BBC's premieres
so
of Doctor Who will be on Disney Plus.
It's so
which
interesting.
I feel like is this really big win for Disney Plus in terms of legitimizing them by having content outside of things that they own.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's kind of nice because it's living there alongside Star Wars and Marvel stuff. So it's
amazing.
It feels like we're serving a niche of fandoms.
Agreed.
Together, mm-hmm. which is kind of good.
Yeah.
And then probably the news that I was most excited for of Disney Plus is we got some of the traditional Playhouse Disney shows on Disney Plus now. So we have PB&J Otter, Roly Poly Oly, Bear in the Big Blue House.
Gosh.
Which for me, getting to watch my nephew 3 days a week, we now, during lunchtime, I pop on Bear in the Big Blue House. He loves it. He thinks the funniest part is when Bear turns around and smells something and he smells you. He thinks it's the funniest thing ever. And I will go behind him and I will like sniff him so he gets the full 40
effect.
Wait,
that just gave me chills when Bear can smell you.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. And we sing the goodbye song together and it's just, it's,
oh my gosh,
he loves it. He fell in love with it right away. And I'm just so glad that we get these shows on Disney Plus. So they can sort of live again for a whole nother generation.
Yes. Oh, that's so special. And then I guess just in terms of updates for Poor Unfortunate Podcast, if you haven't peeped the Instagram today, maybe just go take a peek because can I say what happened or should we just make them go?
Oh, yeah. We can say what happened.
The Poor Unfortunate Shop is now officially open for
it
business.
Is open. It happened. I made it happen.
Yes, you did. Oh, my goodness. We've got sweatshirts, t-shirts, hats, drawstring bags, water bottles, stickers. Like, head on over. Get a little piece of merch. Get a little piece of merchy merch. We also have a couple of quotes from the podcast on shirts. So head over and see if you like those. But also, if there is something memorable from this podcast and you want it on a sticker, on a t-shirt, we're all ears.
Yeah, so, send it to us. I'm loving some of the things that I'm already hearing. Yeah. Figuring out a way to do it. Figuring out how I'm going to do art for it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not an artist. I'm going to have to find somebody. But yeah, just if you've calling got ideas, artists, just shoot them our way.
Calling all artists. Calling all friends artists. Friends of yours? I mean, for
make
real.
Make yourself known.
Yeah,
make
absolutely.
Yourself known.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's happening. It's open. We did not have a bonus episode for you this Halloween because it falls on our regularly scheduled episode. So we figured you'd probably want a full release over a bonus.
Yes.
But we're giving you a bonus of merch.
Yeah.
So trick or treat. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Buy some merch.
Yay.
It's here.
Yeah. And I guess before we go into the actual content of the episode, I would just like to say, I'm not one to gloat.
Do not gloat.
I never win. I have to have this moment. Last episode, our wild card episode, we played
What do you mean you never win?
I feel like when we played the Poor Unfortunate game, I lost.
No, when you won the one where it's like, guess the thing from the three words.
Did I'm going
to
tell that? You.
Yes, you did, because I had to guess in the Magic Kingdom where there was literally
remember,
74
you're
rides
so
I could have chosen
salty.
From.
I can't.
No, I remember that. I clocked that shit away.
I actually didn't remember that I won that. Oh.
Yeah, you did.
Oh. Well, I don't even want to gloat about this because it was so close. But anyway, from our last episode, our wild card episode, our game of comparisons, I guess we'll call it, that we played, we had all of you on our Instagram stories vote between our choices for each category. And I won by a hair. Mm-hmm. I won by a hair. Let's put it that way. Okay. It was very close, but I did emerge victorious. And I just want to celebrate that moment for myself.
Yeah. You can celebrate that with all the people who didn't listen to the episode, didn't hear my reasonings.
Oh, please.
I gave quality answers.
So thank you for voting. Thank you. It was fun, though, to see. Like, we had a really nice turnout of people, like, voting. It was really fun.
It was very
fun.
Thank you for participating. It was a cool way to engage with you all after the episode had aired. So,
thank you
for that. No, it was very
fun. Yeah, that was great.
I'll clock this away as well, Caroline, and destroy you in the next game that we play.
Oh, don't I know it.
I won't.
Don't I know it.
But I will acknowledge the results of this election.
All right. Thank you very much. That goes a long way these days, so thank you for that.
Yeah, right.
That's not nothing.
If I can do it, so can elected officials.
Bless.
Also, before we move on to do the episode, just want to do a reminder to everyone who lives in the United States. Election Day is coming up. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a plan to vote right now, make a quick plan to vote. Fine. There's a ton of resources out there, but please sure that you go out there and exercise your right to vote because it is extremely important. It affects the lives of people in your neighborhood, people in your family, people who live in communities outside of yours. People in other countries are affected by your votes, mm-hmm. especially in these types of elections. And this one, this is extremely important. This is our first chance to make our voices heard after our democracy was sort of called into question on January 6, 2021.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's easy to overlook it because it's not a presidential election year, but it's so important. It's so important. Yeah.
Yeah. So make a plan to vote. Vote early if you can, too, because that's always great. And if you need resources on like how to figure it out, reach out to us.
Absolutely. We're happy to help you figure it out. Absolutely.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Vote. Save democracy.
Ugh.
So I think that's going to do it for us for all of our news and updates. We're going to get into the meat of the episode. So now we are back again at our rant and rave episode. And this one is going to be, this one's going to be a fun one. So because today is Halloween, we wanted to leave you with something that was a little bit on the spooky side, but also something that if you're coming to this episode, you know, after Halloween, it's not going to have to make you watch a Halloween movie when we know you're already playing Christmas music. So we are going to be tackling the topic of ghosts, spirits, the supernatural sort of things in Disney or Disney-owned films. So I have the rant this week. Caroline has the rave.
I'm so excited.
Well, folks, buckle in because I didn't really think I had an opinion. But turns out I had seven
famous
pages
last
worth of an
words
opinion.
From you. Let's be real.
I'm about to tackle something that has never been the main topic of a conversation in any of our full episodes that we've ever done before.
Yeah, we've been a little nervous to touch it. I don't know why. We're just as, you know, we're qualified.
I don't know, I don't know either because yeah. I do know a lot about it. And
yeah.
I am a fan. So we're doing Star Wars, folks.
Yay! Fine. I'm so Happy excited. Halloween. I'm so excited to talk about Star Wars. Yay. Well, you're going to talk and I'm going to listen.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Star Wars and I'm going to have some opinions. So today I'm going to talk to you about Force ghosts in Star Wars. And now I have the rant, so I'm not ranting about Force ghosts in general. But I'm going to be talking specifically about the revision of Anakin Skywalker's Force ghost in Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. And so as I usually do, I just want to quickly just like mention some of my sources here. Mainly the Star Wars films, which I have watched many a time.
Thank God.
The opinions of myself. And then also, I heavily relied on the Star Wars Wikipedia, which is a great collection of, it's fantastic. Like the fandom has done such a great job at upkeeping it and keeping things clear and concise. So specifically around some of the things that I need to sort of set a baseline for you all, some that's coming from Wikipedia's for your convenience. So just going to acknowledge where it's coming from. Spoiler alert for all things Star Wars beyond this point. So if you have not watched Star Wars and intend to, use this as an excuse for you to watch it before you listen to anything, because I'm going to be spoiling some of the biggest plot twists of the entire series. Also, if you aren't interested in Star Wars, watch it because it's a huge achievement in like cinema history. So you also should do that too.
Also, if you've evaded some of these Star Wars spoilers this far into your life, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So just watch it now before I ruin that in this episode. So before I, you know, do anything, we're going to do a little quick deep dive into the history of Force ghosts. What are they? So a Force ghost or a Force spirit is the manifestation of a Force-sensitive individual's consciousness after their life form has deceased. So it's an achievement of spiritual immortality that allows the individual to preserve their identity and communicate with the living after their death. Individuals who become Force ghosts, they undergo special training, and this knowledge is only available to those who follow the light side of the Force. Sith cannot do this. They have other things that they can do, but they can't do this. The process is really quite demanding, so typically only Jedi and those most closely connected to the Force were able to become Force ghosts. So Force ghosts, how they're created. So I'm going to talk about the Force specifically. The Force, as we know, is an energy field that binds all things together through space and time, and it's made of two parts. There's the living Force, which binds together all living things, and then there's the cosmic Force, which binds together all else and sort of communicates the will of the Force, which is basically like destiny. So think of it as sort of like a yin and yang sort of thing that the two communicate with each other and they make up the Force. In death, you pass from the living Force into the cosmic Force. unless you're a badass like Leia Organa, who refuses to depart to the cosmic force without her son's redemption first, which, like, all hail. Like, she held off death.
Oh, it's so amazing.
Right?
I just say it's such a beautiful concept, too. I just really love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Force spirits, they manifest from energy that is flowing from the living force into the cosmic force. So from that, like, motion between the two, that's where force goes to manifest. Mm. In the context of the Skywalker saga, Qui-Gon Jinn is the first Jedi we follow who attempts this training to become a force spirit. And we learn in the Clone Wars television series that he had begun his training with the Shaman of the Wills, but had not finished when he was hashtag murdered in The Phantom Menace by Darth Maul. This being the case, he was only able to manifest as a disembodied voice. Mm. However, he imparted the knowledge onto Master Yoda, who in turn shared it with Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Qui-Gon Jinn was able to eventually complete his training in death, having already communed with Master Yoda after an extended period of time. And after the fall of Anakin, Qui-Gon Jinn was even more determined to fully manifest his corporeal self and was eventually able to appear to Obi-Wan Kenobi on Tatooine at the close of the TV series Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right.
Everything's all tied together, right?
Like, it's so great. Cool.
Qui-Gon learned that the path to retain one's consciousness after death was absolute selflessness. So let's stick a pin in that for later. Force ghosts, what can they do? Force ghosts can actually do quite a lot. They can manifest anywhere in the galaxy where there's a strong presence of the Force. Some have demonstrated the ability to manipulate the Force as a Force ghost, as they did in life, like Master Yoda, who is able to control the weather in Last Jedi when he burns he summons lightning.
Yeah.
Others have been able to interact with objects and living beings in the physical world. So, you know, Yoda is Yoda, as an example, again, he whacks Luke with his walking stick as a Force ghost, and Luke feels it. Mm-hmm. Additionally, Force ghosts can actually help preserve the consciousness of Force-sensitive people who have done extraordinary feats of selflessness and sacrifice, which are the keys of the light side of the Force that open the path to the knowledge of Force spirits. They've been able to preserve those people after death without the necessary training. So this was the case of Anakin Skywalker, who did not have that knowledge, and Ben Solo, who did not have that knowledge, who died never having been trained because of their respective turns to the dark side and their subsequent redemptions. So the Force ghosts were able to make them Force ghosts, essentially.
Okay.
Are we following?
I am.
Is this making sense?
Absolutely. Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah. I just accept things as they come sometimes in Star Wars, and I'm like, oh no, there's a whole lot going on.
There's a process. Because if you don't know Star Wars, the mythology of Star Wars extends across films, TV series, video games,
so much.
Books,
it's Legos,
comics. like, there's so much. Yeah. And the mythology sort of pops up and is expanded in every single medium. It's kind of incredible.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. So now that we've got a brief history of Force ghosts, what they do, I want to walk through the history of Anakin Skywalker's Force ghost and how it was changed in the films. So George Lucas, he has this habit of altering his films after the fact. Jumping out of the lore of Star Wars, we're going to talk about this change, the specific gripe that I have, and how it came to be. So for those of you who don't know the main story of Star Wars, known as the Skywalker Saga, it charts the course of the Skywalker family, their connections to the Force, and roles as Jedi over three periods of time, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. The first film, Star Wars, aka Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, kicked off the series in 1977, followed by two more films, Star Wars Episode V, The Empire Strikes Back in 1980, and Star Wars Episode VI, Return of the Jedi in 1983. The trilogy exploded in popularity, and eventually plans were put in place to complete the prequel trilogy in the late 90s and early 2000s. With the approaching 20th anniversary of Star Wars in 1997, George Lucas, the director and creator, knew that there were some parts of the first film that he was still dissatisfied with and were not going to age well, especially next to the new films that would rely heavily on CGI technology that was all the rage and unavailable to him at the time of the first film. So mainly his goal was to like clean up some shots that he knew weren't going to age well. Fine, we get that. His embarrassment really led him to take the 20th anniversary edition as an opportunity to re-edit the film to include effects and accommodate choices that were not possible to him originally because of time, money, and the state of cinematic technology in 1977. So these revisions were actually serving as a test of sorts for the CGI and visual effects that they would then use for the three prequel films. So basically they wanted a guinea pig and they decided to use the original Star Wars as a guinea pig. After the first film was completed, Lucas said that, quote, "It was such a good experience. I said, we should go back and finish the other two as well." Which they did. After the first round of edits and the release of the first two prequel films, Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace in 1999, and Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones in 2002, a DVD release was planned in 2004 of the original trilogy ahead of 2005's Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where shit really hits the fan. In these releases, further changes were made to the original films for the sake of continuity with the prequel films. These edits were met with more criticism from fans and critics alike, as the changes were not just about quality control, but actual revisions to the films. Essentially, they didn't really trust that people would believe that they're all within the same story, even though so much ties them together without everything else.
Okay.
Among the alterations that they made for this DVD release was the change to Anakin Skywalker's Force Ghost at the end of Return of the Jedi. I'll say that even after the release of Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith in 2005, George Lucas and Lucasfilm continued to make edits and alterations to all of the films, including the prequel series.
Wow.
With the most recent edits being made for the 4K Ultra HD editions in 2019. Now, most of those edits were being made, again, for quality control to keep up with the Ultra HD technology that we're using that would, you know, point out some flaws pretty quickly. But they're always making edits on these films.
But isn't it just like, don't we all just accept that it's in the time, it belongs to the time that it was filmed in? I do, personally.
You would think.
All right.
You would think.
Okay.
So the scene and alteration in question here that has been so hotly debated among fans, critics, and everyone in between comes at the end of Return of the Jedi. So in the final moments of the film, Luke, Leia, Han, and company are celebrating at the Ewok village on the forest moon of Endor after successfully destroying the Imperial base, the Death Star 2, in basically a checkmate to the Empire. As they celebrate, Luke looks over into the forest and sees the Force ghosts of Obi-Wan Kenobi, his mentor in the ways of the Force, Master Yoda, his teacher who had recently passed during the events of the film, and now his father, Anakin Skywalker, who sacrificed himself to save Luke and died in Luke's arms. In the 1983 theatrical release and all releases prior to the 2004 DVD release slash remaster, the actor who portrayed the unmasked Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi, renowned British actor Sebastian Shaw, also portrayed Anakin in his Force ghost form in the final scene of the film. Some things to note very quickly about Sebastian Shaw in this film. Shaw was cast in 1982 when the casting team decided that they needed an experienced actor to deliver the climactic redemption scene between Luke and his father. With an illustrious film and theater career, they landed on Sebastian Shaw, who at the time had seen and enjoyed the first two films, and his casting was kept very secret from everyone on set, including from his friend Ian McDiarmid, who was portraying Emperor Palpatine.
That's funny.
Sebastian Shaw speaks 24 words of dialogue in the scene, with his total screen time in the movie lasting under 3 minutes. Shaw was personally directed by George Lucas for the scene in which he appears as a Force ghost. And George Lucas was not the director for Return of the Jedi.
Wow.
Interesting to note. In the 2004 DVD release and all subsequent releases of Return of the Jedi, edits were made to the portrayal of Anakin Skywalker in the film. Digital effects were added to the unmasking scene of Darth Vader to match the Sith eyes of Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, as well as scarring to match the burns received in the film from the battle on Mustafar. The goal of these edits was to create more continuity between the prequels and the original trilogy. Fine.
Okay.
But the final change they made was to remove Sebastian Shaw's performance of Anakin Skywalker's Force Ghost and instead replace it with footage of young Anakin Skywalker played by Hayden Christensen. The footage of Hayden's Anakin used for this scene is said to have been taken from repurposed test footage of Hayden for Revenge of the Sith, not footage shot specifically to replace this scene. All right.
Wow. I didn't know this. This is interesting.
So that's the stuff that we need to know about the production of the films and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Now let's talk about Anakin's arc specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So Anakin Skywalker probably charts one of the most famous redemption arcs in cinema history. With the addition of the prequel series, we get to see Anakin's rise, fall, and redemption, making much of the overall Skywalker saga a character study of Anakin Skywalker. Personally, one of my favorite ways to watch the films is to start with 4, watch 5, then go back, watch 1, 2, 3, and then watch 6. Because that gives you this really cool through line of Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader, of like, you know who the Darth Vader is. It's revealed that it's his father. And then you're like, oh my gosh. And then we flash back, watch what happens. And then we finish with 6. It's a really fun way to watch the series.
Ooh, I've never done that. Okay.
It's really cool. Experiment with the ways that you watch this series because it tells you a different story every single time. It's really, really cool to do. Just my little, you know, 2 cents.
Tip of the day.
So for the sake of the importance of the change, I think it's important to establish what his character arc is in the films. So I'm going to be brief. Anakin is met in episode 1 as a young boy on Tatooine, immaculately conceived and showing force sensitivity that surpassed even that of some of the most established Jedi masters. Believing that he is the chosen one who would destroy the Sith and bring balance to the Force, Anakin is taken to train as a Jedi under Obi-Wan Kenobi. Despite being highly emotional and reckless, traits that are not seen as good or helpful in the Jedi Order, he quickly rose in the ranks to become a Jedi General for the Grand Army of the Republic in the Clone Wars. Through his progress and training, he also began to have a secret relationship with Senator Padme Amidala, something forbidden in the Jedi Order, where they're not meant to get married, make romantic attachments, or really attachments to anyone. After marrying in secret, Anakin learns that Padme is pregnant, but receives a vision of Padme in pain during childbirth. Seeking a power to cheat death and tempted by a Sith Lord operating in the open, disguised as Senator Palpatine, Anakin gives in to the dark side of the Force, becoming the new Sith apprentice. His fall from the light side of the Force culminates in a rage-filled battle with his mentor, Obi-Wan Kenobi, where Anakin loses, suffering from all kinds of third-degree burns and dismemberment. Before his death, he is found by Palpatine and saved by being made into a cyborg and assumes his Sith title of Darth Vader. Together with Palpatine, they bring about the end of the Jedi Order and the founding of the Empire under their rule. Unbeknownst to Anakin, Padme gives birth to twins, Luke and Leia, who are separated for their protection from him before Padme dies. Years later, Luke is an emerging Jedi working with the Rebellion to bring an end to the Empire's vicious rule. On learning that Luke is his son, Darth Vader attempts to bring him over to the dark side and deliver him to Emperor Palpatine. Luke knows from Master Yoda that he must confront his father, and he believes that he can bring his father back to the light. Luke offers himself up to Darth Vader on the second Death Star, where he is brought before the Emperor Palpatine to be tempted to the dark side. Luke resists and is tortured nearly to death by Palpatine. And Darth Vader, unable to see the pain inflicted on his son and listening to Luke calling out to him as a father, picks up the Emperor, Force Lightning ablaze, and takes all of his Force Lightning as he hurls the Emperor off a bridge into the center reactor of the Death Star 2. Dying from the blows from the Force Lightning to his suit's control panel, shorting out its function, he asks Luke to remove his helmet to look upon his son with his own eyes. In this final moment with Luke, Anakin tells him that Luke saved him, that he was right about him, that there was still good within him, and to tell his sister Leia that he was right. And with that, he dies in Luke's arms, redeemed as Anakin Skywalker, and finally at peace. So that's Anakin's story. So now that we know what Force Ghosts are, now we know about the production of this film, why changes were made, things like that, and now we know Anakin's story, I want to go into the Force Ghost replacement and how it undercuts Anakin's character and his redemption arc. I'm going to start with George Lucas's justification for the choice so that we can know where he's coming from, so I can tell you why George Lucas is completely fucking wrong. George Lucas justified this change in an interview for Movie Phone between himself and Hayden Christensen in 2005, where Hayden was like interviewing him. Mm-hmm. When Hayden asks about the change of Anakin's Force Ghost to his younger self in Return of the Jedi, Lucas says, quote, "It was added in because it's a fun way of finishing off the entire series. The idea was that your inner person would go back to where we left it off when it turned to the dark side, when you got burned up and everything. But before you got burned up, so when you come back to the good side of the Force, it's your former persona that survives, not the Darth Vader persona." End quote. In a way, I understand what he is trying to say in this and his attempt to distance the viewer from the Darth Vader
persona. Yeah, I can actually. Okay, so far I follow. Okay.
Okay. I also think it's him doubling down a little to justify some of the hotly debated dialogue from the original trilogy around Obi-Wan saying that Darth Vader killed Luke's father, something that even this year they are still reckoning with and trying to justify in the Obi-Wan Kenobi TV series. Mm-hmm. It baffles me, though, because it's all metaphorical. It's a figure of speech.
Right, right. Okay.
We don't need to twist ourselves in knots over, is Anakin actually dead? And how does the Darth Vader persona kill him? Blah, 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 blah,
oh,
blah.
Oh my gosh, no. People are really
George
saying
Lucas,
that?
In this quote, is saying that Anakin appears as a Force ghost the way he appeared the last time he was Anakin. Mm-hmm. I agree with this. But when was the last time he was Anakin? And this is where the choice to replace Anakin's Force Ghost and the reasoning behind it starts to break down for me. Because Anakin Skywalker, contrary to the Obi-Wan quote, sorry Obi-Wan, never really died. He said so himself to Luke in his final moments. He says, quote, "You were right. You were right about me. Tell your sister you were right." End quote. The right in this instance being Luke's insistence that there is still good in his father, that Anakin lives on inside him and always has, and that he could choose the light at any moment, a little act we call redemption. Hmm. So let's talk about redemption. Anakin's story is all about redemption, and I think it's pivotal that we understand what that means. So redemption is the act of saving or being saved from sin, error, or evil. And I think it's important to note that redemption is not a reset. It's not about being someone else or pretending that you are something that you are not, or even going back to a previous version of yourself, because that's not the truth. And redemption happens in truth. It happens from where you are, as who you are, in any given moment. And I think that's what makes it so miraculous when it happens, that somewhere deep in your errors, you can make a choice or be found and go another way. You take a moment to honestly see yourself for all your faults and say, this person is going to turn away from a path of evil and hurt. And this is what happens as Darth Vader watches his son dying before him. We literally cut to the helmet. And watching the reflection in the eyes of the helmet, he sees in Luke's suffering who he has become, and he rejects Vader, claiming the light as Anakin. He makes the choice to destroy the Emperor, sacrificing himself to save his son as Anakin. In returning Anakin's Force Ghost to his younger, former self, Lucas is erasing that redemption. It's being dismissed and rewritten for a cheap attempt at unnecessary continuity between films that people were already behind. You didn't need to sell us on them being connected anymore, George. And I'd like to think that if Anakin returns as a Force ghost, he would return as the version of himself that did the most heroic act of his lifetime, not the troubled younger version of himself. Because young Anakin had a lot of turmoil happening in him. He should be the version of himself that embraced himself for all of his faults and found enlightenment in the last moments in the arms of his son. So that's one reason why I don't think that the change is good. The next is about Anakin's role as the Chosen One. We talked briefly about his role as the Chosen One and what it means, bringing balance to the Force and bringing an end to the Sith. But how do you bring an end to the Sith? So a long, 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 long time ago, Sith Lord Darth Bane created a law for the Sith called the Rule of Two to ensure the survival and secrecy of the Sith so that one day they might enact their revenge on the Jedi. So the law of the Rule of Two states that there must always be two Sith Lords, no more, no less, a master who symbolizes and uses the power of the dark side, and an apprentice who trains and desires the power, eventually killing the master to assume his role and take an apprentice of his own. The master could cast off the apprentice at any time for a stronger apprentice, and the apprentice is always looking for a weakness in the master to rise into their own power. Thus, the rule, built in distrust for one another, bred more powerful and more cunning Sith Lords until they could enact Darth Bane's grand plan for revenge on the Jedi and Sith rule over the galaxy. And this basically happens when Darth Vader and Darth Sidious, aka Palpatine, execute Order 66 to assassinate all Jedi and dissolve the Republic in favor of a galactic empire under Palpatine's rule. So, like, good job, Darth Bane, because your plan worked and the law did its job. But in order for the Chosen One to fulfill his duties of bringing balance to the Force and defeat the Sith, the cycle of the Rule of Two must be broken, ending Sith rule. I would argue that in Anakin's final act of killing his Sith master and dying himself, he fulfills his duty as the Chosen One, restoring balance to the Force and destroying the Sith. Now, obvi, he didn't know that Palps had some clones of himself and shit for Rey to find and deal with in the sequel trilogy. But for the sake of Anakin's journey, I believe he does assume his role, the Chosen One, in these actions. Killing his Sith master, not as an apprentice lusting for the same power of his master, but as a father saving his son, the Sith line is broken. Anakin rejects the way of the dark side in his final act before his death and destroys the Sith, effectively ending their empirical rule over the galaxy, restoring balance to the Force. Therefore, the older Anakin, who chucks Palpy into the heart of the Death Star, is not just his best redeemed self, as I've established previously, but also the only version of himself that actually accepts his role as the Chosen One he was destined and prophesied to become. And I believe the Chosen One version of Anakin deserves to be preserved as the Force ghost, the man at the end of Return of the Jedi who rose in the light, fell to the dark side, redeemed himself, and became the Chosen One who brought balance to the Force, no Jedi rule, no Sith rule, and destroyed the Sith with himself being the last Sith. So the Chosen One is my other reason for the change being bad. And my third is a little bit different. It has much less to do with the lore. This is more about the production. And it's a slight to these actors. Reducing Sebastian Shaw's role retroactively, even more than his already limited role, feels incredibly disrespectful to his contribution to Star Wars. Not only was he cast for this role and directed specifically for the scene as a Force ghost, he was incredibly well received by the fans. In fact, I've seen other folks argue online, and I agree, that this also does a disservice to Hayden Christensen in that he never got to actually act this scene as well. Instead, they puzzled together some extra footage for the final moments of this character's arc, rather than let him imbue it with something to sell this new version of the resolution. Which, personally, this type of approach to directing where you make something else out of something that was not intended for a specific purpose in a story feels, when unnecessary as this was, a violation of sorts to the integrity of the film. Now an editor is crafting a performance for an actor without the actor's say-so or being involved at all. Mm. And at the end of the day, the actor gets saddled with a performance they actually didn't do, usually to their artistic detriment. And when you watch this new scene in particular, you can tell that Anakin was not being directed for this scene in some of the expressions and looks that he gives, not matching that of the tone of his fellow Force ghosts. He feels very disconnected from the other actors because, again, he most likely wasn't given the chance to act this scene. So yeah, I have some thoughts on this change, and I have reasons why it never should have happened. But alas, the change was made. George Lucas stands by it, claiming that Anakin's Force ghost should return to the last time that he was whole, the last time that he walked in the light. But by his own logic, I would say the last time Anakin was whole and walked in the light was when he finally rejected the dark side and saved his son, redeeming himself, when he destroyed the Sith and brought balance to the Force as the Chosen One, when he was portrayed by an actor cast for his ability to capture the gravitas and nuance of Anakin's complicated life at the end of the story, not as a young version of himself before he fell to the dark side, but as a scarred, broken man who finally, after a lifetime of searching, found peace for the first time in his return to the light.
Oh.
And that is where I rest my case.
Wow,
that
is you where convinced my rant. Me.
That is why this change is so detrimental to Anakin's story. And I think that's pretty much all I have to say on it.
Are we able to see both versions?
No.
You aren't?
Nope. Unless you have one of the VHS releases of Star Wars, every other version available for streaming that is released from now on has the current changes.
Wow.
There are rumors that George Lucas edited the masters of the film.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which I say rumors because I haven't actually verified this information for myself, but I'm like pretty sure he edited the masters of the films. Yeah. Which is a bold move.
Yeah.
So that's what I got to say about that.
I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Oh, you did? Oh, good.
You did.
Yeah. Star Wars mythology and lore is very, very interesting. And I do acknowledge that I gave a very, very reduced version of
But thank you, the lore. Because for me, like, obviously having seen all the movies multiple times, I still don't, it still takes a minute for me to follow. So
yeah,
I think that'll be good for everyone listening who maybe has seen it once, if that. So
if you are interested in a lot of the mythology and lore of Star Wars, I actually really recommend that you watch the Clone Wars series, the animated series.
Yeah, the Clone Wars series is really good. Yeah.
It slaps as all hell. And you learn some of the really great mythology of Star Wars, the origins of the Force.
Yeah.
You learn about the rule of two.
It does slap as all kinds hell.
All kinds of things. It honestly feels like an Avatar The Last Airbender sort of situation.
Yes, and everybody who loves Avatar also loves Clone Wars, so I totally agree with you. Yep.
They do. And now we're getting Tales of the Jedi on Disney+.
Yeah.
Which gives you short stories from the dark side and the light side.
It's super cool.
So that's going to add so much more. And who knows? Maybe that changes the entire basis of everything you just mentioned about. But we'll find out if we find out.
No, I think this will age well.
Very, very confident about this. So that's the first Star Wars rant.
Thank you for just breaking the seal. It was time.
Poor Unfortunate Podcast.
Yeah, it was definitely, it was past time. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So yeah. That's that. You up.
All right. Well, actually, I feel like our two ghosts are kind of connected in a way.
Yeah. I have no idea what you're about to do. You knew what I was doing, and I have no idea what you're about to do.
Yeah. So I am going to talk about the 1996 Disney television film, Susie Q, which I feel like...
Oh, you do go with Susie Q.
I'm going with Susie Q. So I feel like if you know, you know. And if you don't, you definitely don't. So either way, I hope you all enjoy. Because if you remember this, I mean, we need to take a moment and talk about it. Because it sort of disappeared. So I'm going to talk a bit about maybe why, about its interesting history, and about why it is a fantastic ghost story and super sophisticated for what is in the style of a Disney Channel original movie, but isn't actually one. So let's just get into all of that stuff first. Let's get into the background as you do as well. But yeah, a lot of connecting themes here. Redemption arcs, the rules of ghostdom. So I'm excited to get into this. Let's go. So honestly, I'm just so excited to finally be talking about Susie Q on the podcast. I feel like when we started the podcast, I was like, one day we're going to do Susie Q.
I don't think I've ever watched Susie Q. Or if I did, I was very young and I watched it like one time.
So yeah, I feel like I'm wondering, now that you bring that up, I'm like, I wonder how many times in my life I've actually seen Susie Q. Probably a handful. But let me tell you, it has had a chokehold on me since the first time I saw it on Disney Channel in the 90s. Interestingly, up until I just got my hands on it again, so much of the plot was foggy in my memory. Like Susie's, you know, spoiler alert, I'm going to give you a little plot synopsis, but she comes back as a ghost. Like her motivation for returning to Earth, couldn't tell you. But what stuck in my mind was the opening of this movie depicting her death. We're going to get into that whole sequence. But let me tell you, it is
very
lived.
That's very...
Oh, my God.
Portrait gallery of... yes, it is. Of portrait chamber of Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, honestly, I never thought I was that person until we've done this podcast. And I'm like, am I obsessed with death? I think I might be. Okay.
You like dead people at the beginning of things.
I like dead people in openings. It's very specific. So... I actually learned this for the first time doing this research. In my mind, Susie Q was just another Disney Channel original movie because it aired alongside all of the other ones. But although Susie Q aired on Disney Channel and is owned by Disney, it is not a Disney Channel original movie, as it may be in many of our memories. And it is not on Disney Plus and likely never will be because of a few things about its background that I'm going to share with you. So Susie Q originally aired not on Disney Channel, but on Super RTL, a German television network that's a joint venture between the German company CLT UFA and Disney's Buena Vista International Television Investments, which later became Disney International Operations. So
weird.
Yeah. Super RTL itself had only launched the year before in 1995. The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh was its first program. And so was pretty much presenting Disney programming to German audiences. It did lose its Disney programming in 2013 with the launch of the German version of the Disney Channel. And so since then has moved away from Disney programming. So this movie is technically still a Walt Disney Pictures film. You'll see that overlay on some of the posters. So Susie Q first aired on Disney Channel in the U.S. on October 6th, 1996. The tagline for the movie at its premiere was, "Death is just the beginning." I love it.
That's you.
I love it. So death in the beginning.
It's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. I'm here for it.
So just a quick run through of the creative team. So this was directed by John Blyzak, who really comes from directing a bunch of episodes of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And so spoiler, we've got a lot of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers creatives on this movie. So first of all, I mean, skipping ahead, Amy Jo Johnson, who plays Susie Q, is the Pink Power Ranger in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. But not only that, this movie is written by Shuki Levy, who wrote for Power Rangers, Digimon, Inspector Gadget, and Douglas Sloan, with Shuki Levy and Lance H. Robbins as the executive producers. So as I mentioned, Susie Q stars Amy Jo Johnson, the Pink Power Ranger, as the title character, Justin Whalen as Zach, and Shelley Long as Zach's mom, Penny. It also features Andrea Libman as Terry Sanders, who is Zach's sister, Garwin Sanford as Coach Stanford, and Bentley Mitchum as Johnny Angel. And the budget was $2 million Canadian dollars, so it was filmed in Canada. And the production companies were Libra Pictures and Shavik Entertainment. So there's just things coming from a lot of different directions. There's so little information about this movie anywhere. I am so curious as to how this movie really came about, how the Power Rangers team came to the story. I have to know. If anyone can connect me with these folks, I want to talk to them. So before we discuss anything else, let me give a synopsis because, like I said, either you're like me and you saw it probably four or five times in your childhood and it stuck with you, or you've never seen it because it wasn't on that often. I'm going to have to spoil the whole movie for you. I'm very sorry, but it's important for the conversation. So for those of you not familiar, here is the synopsis. Spoilers, spoilers. The movie opens in 1955 in the fictional town of Willow Valley, Washington, and high schooler Susie is getting ready for her winter formal. We get some interesting, side note, we get some interesting, like, naked back shots, like her, like, pulling on her pantyhose. Like, there's mature content in this. It was very interesting. Quite German. Watching this now, my mom was very specific about the things I was allowed to watch. And I'm surprised this didn't get switched off, but yeah, we made it all the way through.
No black cauldron, but here's naked girl's back.
Yeah. Anyway, there are a lot of funny moments in this that, like, we're raving about this, so we won't harp on them. But there are a few funny things that are just like, you know, 90s Disney TV films. What are you going to do?
Sure.
So as Susie is preparing to go to the formal, her grandfather, who lives with her, is trying to get her attention as she prepares to leave with her boyfriend, Johnny Angel. But she tells him to rest and she's on her way. Johnny gifts her with a charm bracelet as they get into his car and head to the dance. On the way, Susie suddenly insists that Johnny stop the car. Inexplicably in the middle of the road on a bridge, but okay, all right. As she has a nagging feeling that she needs to get back home and find out what her grandfather wanted when she kind of shushed him and put him to bed. But just then, a car of drunk teens emerges on the bridge and strikes Johnny's car. In their last moments, Susie grabs Johnny's hand as the car falls into the waterway below and the two pass away. And my young self was shooketh.
And hooked.
Hooked. I was in. Say no more.
Oh my gosh, that's really dark.
Yes, and it's like when you see it, it's like, you know, we see her, there's blood on her head. It's a thing. So fast forward to 1995, and Zach, a, you know, teen guy, and his mother and sister have just moved into what, unbeknownst to them, is Susie's family's home. Zach is no stranger to tragedy, as his father died in a car accident on the way to one of Zach's basketball games. So Zach blames himself, no longer plays basketball, but he's a star player, okay? Strange things are going on in the house. The faucets are turning on and off, all of those kinds of things. And then one day, as Zach and his younger sister Terry are just randomly fishing in the town waterway.
As you do.
Zach catches Susie's old charm bracelet on his line. That night, he's looking out his bedroom window and sees a young girl his age shooting hoops in his driveway. Naturally, he goes down to see what's going on. And Susie is shocked to discover that Zach can see her as she is a ghost. As she tries to convince him and explain that she is, you know, from the 50s, she is a ghost, she's dead, Zach just puts himself to bed and is like, I'm dreaming this, I'm going to start over again in the morning. But the next day at school, the old janitor shows him an old photo of Susie from the school in the 50s, confirming that Susie is indeed a real person who died in the 50s.
He just happened to have this picture?
She's like, you know, in the trophy case because she was like a cheerleader and it's kind of like in memory. Okay. It's like an in memoriam little thing from when she passed away.
Gotcha.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Not like he just like pulled out like a wallet-sized photo to his kids and he's like, I also have this picture of this dead girl.
It's Susie. Okay. He does say, he's like, he says something like, she was a dream, like you would have loved her. So I don't know what the backstory is there. Would love to investigate. Mm. But anyway. All right. So now that Zach knows that Susie didn't die about 40 years before, she returns to see Zach again and even follows him to school the next day, begging for his help because she's here because she wants to find out what happened to her parents after her death. After her presence that only Zach knows about and can see, nobody else can see or sense her, gets him into trouble and embarrassment at school, he finally agrees to find Susie's parents and help her out. When he finds them, he discovers that they're facing homelessness because of a missing title deed to their, you know, to their property, and the local bank is demanding a $25,000 balloon payment that they can't afford. Which, let's just pause. We're talking about property deeds, balloon payment. Like, we're getting in there. It's sophisticated stuff. We finally discover that Susie's spirit has come back, of course, not just to find out what has happened to her parents, but because the night of her death, her grandfather was looking for the deed and she put him to bed instead of listening to him. So she could have kind of prevented this whole thing from happening. Susie and Zach are now in a race against time to find the deed, which is eventually revealed to prove that Susie's family owns most of the land in Willow Valley, which the, you know, the evil bank is trying to take over. And we've got a deadline of like midnight on Friday night is when it's all going to go down. Yeah,
very Goonies.
Absolutely. Situation. You have to. Zach eventually saves the town from the dastardly deeds of the local bank owner. Spoiler, Susie brings basketball back into Zach's life and all is righted. Susie knows it's time to return to heaven. So she heads back to the bridge where she passed away. And before getting back into Johnny's car, which like ghostly Johnny pulls up onto the bridge to come get her, Zach tells her that he loves her. And she leaves him with her charm bracelet. The next day at school, Zach meets new student Maggie. And let's just say she looks and sounds just like a gal that we all know and love. And the movie ends. So before we get into the rules of the ghostdom that we've established here and why this is such a really like nuanced and mature ghost film, but also Disney Channel television film, Connor, you caught on to this pretty early on when I started this, but part of the draw about this for me is just the mysterious disappearance of the Susie Q movie in general.
Yeah.
So as I've already covered, it's not a Disney Channel original movie. It began airing on Disney Channel right before Wish Upon a Star, which we all might be very familiar with, starring a young Katherine Heigl. And that is not a Disney Channel original movie either. In fact, up until October 1997, films on Disney Channel were released under the banner of Disney Channel Premiere Films. So the first actual Disney Channel original movie was under wraps in 1997. So part of Susie Q's more mature and sometimes graphic air is owed to the fact that it wasn't produced specifically as a Disney Channel original. It premiered in another country, all of this stuff. When it aired on Disney Channel, some of the profanity that's in it was removed and it earned a TVG rating, which I'm like, I wouldn't the give profanity. It a TVG. Yes, you what can kind see, of... you can see it. I think someone says ass and stuff like that. You can see it kind of, if you watch people's mouths move, you see it got dubbed over. It's pretty funny. But yeah, it was a TVG. I don't know. I don't agree with that personally. But anyway, so despite the fact that what I consider kind of its sister film in Wish Upon a Star, something that did extremely well, you know, started airing right after it. You know, Wish Upon a Star was being re-aired in 2002, DVD releases, all of these things. Susie Q stopped airing on Disney Channel by the early 2000s. And that was that. You can find several full versions of the movie on YouTube. That's how I came to, you know, revisit it for this episode, proving that it really made an impact in about literally just the 5 or so years that it was airing on television. There are almost more posts of the movie on YouTube than there are any articles online providing any kind of detail about the movie's production, anything about why it stopped airing. It's just being kept alive by the fans, which I love because I feel like I'm also one of them. I feel the same way that all of these people do who are commenting on this version of it. So I think part of the film's appeal for me has always been this feeling that I imagined its existence. Like for a little while, I really did think that I would be that kid who made up a Disney Channel original movie about this girl who dies in a car crash. Like,
yeah, that's on brand.
Yeah. I was like, for a while, I was like, that couldn't, I was like, I must be conflating that with something else. No, it's Susie Q. So yeah, it really only aired for about 5 or so years. And as far as I can recall, only aired around Halloween as well. And there doesn't seem to be anything I can track online as far as large-scale backlash to any of its content that would have caused it to be pulled from airing so suddenly. It's also surprising to me that Disney would stop airing anything that has some sort of Halloween undertone. We can only air Halloween Town, and, you know, Twitches so many times, right? So why why was this pulled the way that it was? I can't get that question out of my head. And I think, like I said, the mysterious disappearance of this film has only fed its appeal over the years. It's kind of become this cult thing. And it is pretty interesting, you know, that a movie about a dead girl ghost was just pulled without explanation. It feels right. It feels very spooky. And we know I love that. So let's get into the actual content of the movie and all of the things that are going so right here. So first of all, if someone described to me a Disney Channel original movie style film about a ghost girl, I'd probably be like, yeah, I'm not interested, especially at the age that we are now. Not for nothing. I mean, especially after you told me that the creative team was like from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, I would expect a very different movie and it wouldn't interest me. To be perfectly frank. But there is a lot of sophisticated stuff going on here that you wouldn't expect from a Disney television movie in general. Like, this movie made now as a Disney Channel original movie could easily be called, like, Ghosted. And it's, like, kind of phoned in. And it's like, oh, like, this ghost is following me around. It's really cramping my style. Like, a Disney Channel original movie style movie about a ghost could have easily been this very surface level Halloween phone-in. And this was not that. And I think one of the ways that it's really going right in the first place is the detail and nuance that went into developing Susie herself. So there's something about the 1950s opening of the movie that feels especially haunting to me. And unlike any other Disney television film, Susie introduces her name as inspired by the song, Susie Q, the 1950s Dale Hawkins song. The song is pretty lyrically simple. It's pretty much the lyrics are, oh, Susie Q, how I love you. I like the way you talk. I like the way you walk. Well, say that you'll be true and never leave me blue.
A Taylor Swift of their time.
Truly. This is cool on one level, which is that this is how Zach eventually ends up feeling about Susie. When he tells her that he loves her on the bridge at the end of the movie, right before she does leave him and does leave him blue. Thought it was interesting. But Susie's story is also very clearly inspired by the genre of teen tragedy songs that became popular in the 1950s and 60s. These were also called death discs and splatter platters and told very melodramatic stories of teen deaths specifically. And so these probably came about at the intersection of the teen angst and rebellion of rock and roll, as that collided with the narrative nature of folk songs that were also kind of having a revival at that moment. So one of them, Teen Angel, is extremely reminiscent of Susie's death in this. And I'm thinking that they must have pulled the inspiration from this one. I have absolutely no proof. But Teen Angel tells the story of a girl and her boyfriend. And her boyfriend is the narrator of the song, who were out for a ride in his car when it stalls on a railroad track in the path of an oncoming train. He pulls her to safety, but she runs back to the car and is killed. When they recover her body, they find his high school ring in her hand. I guess that's probably why she ran back to the car. I get that. Strange. Side note, I'm just also a little bit blown away by how many songs make up this genre if you jump into it. Like, where did this fascination with, like, romantic teen death come from? But absolute genius move to turn one into a movie, let alone one that's aimed at a younger audience. You have to have some guts to do that, and they went for it, and I'm loving it. So this brings me to the death scene specifically. Now, as we've discussed already, we all know I was very into the macabre when I was a kid. I guess I still am. So I thought part of the reason that this movie stuck with me was because we see Susie's death in what is a pretty graphic fashion for a film, again, aimed at kids. We see her and Johnny in the car after the collision happens. He's unconscious at the wheel, slumped over, and she has fallen out of her seat and is kind of on the floor of the car with blood on her head. And she reaches for him as the car falls off the bridge. Upon trolling the many, many comments on the YouTube postings of this movie, I see that it stuck with a lot of people for the same reason. The image of Susie grabbing for Johnny's hand in her final moments is incredibly haunting. That's like feature film level stuff.
Yeah.
What I also love about this is that this wasn't specifically a Halloween movie. They could have easily slipped in, you know, a small touch of Halloween into this. For example, had the plot center around a Halloween dance happening at Zack's school, as Disney Channel movies tend to do. That would have made it a little bit more marketable as a specifically holiday movie that Disney Channel could put on around Halloween. But this feels specifically built to be a mystery, love story, teen adventure that just happens to have a dead girl in it. There's no leaning into the spooky, overtly Halloween vibes, and I think that's part of what makes it so broadly appealing beyond just a cute Disney TV movie. Susie being a ghost isn't about her being undead at all, which would make it a Halloween movie. It's about her spirit having unfinished business as it pertains to the people she loves and left behind. And that is some really sophisticated stuff. Sure, we do have a few ghost gags, like Zack throws Susie a CD to catch to prove to Terry, his sister, that there is actually a ghost in the room. But the gag of it never becomes the focus, as in what I feel like a more contemporary Disney Channel original movie approach would be. Like I said, which is like, oh, there's a ghost following me around and she's messing up my life at high school. That's not the focus of this at all. And I love it. As far as I can recall, though, Disney Channel really did only air this movie around Halloween. If anyone listening kind of remembers seeing it at any other time, let me know, because I remember waiting for Disney to announce the Halloween programming. I specifically remember one specific day, my dad had dragged me to this like thing that I didn't want to go to, and I just knew what time Susie Q was going to be on that night, and I like knew that I had to get home at that time. So it was like a rare thing. It was very exciting.
Did you ever tape it?
I don't think I did. Also, this story involves a real investigation of death that I can definitely say we have not seen in any Disney television films since. My favorite scene of the movie is one in which Zack asks Susie what it's like to die. Although her answer, you know, it might leave a bit to be desired for adults now, I think her answer is a really lovely one for a younger audience. She knows that Zack is asking because he's wondering what it was like for his father when he died. And she tells him that his father was likely thinking of him and his sister and his mother when he died. And she tells Zack that when your life ends, you're still responsible for taking care of the people that you love. She assures Zack that his father is watching over him and even talks about heaven, uses the word heaven, says that that is where she went and that's where his father is. This is definitely not territory that would be touched by a Halloween-y ghost movie. And I don't think there are many examples of such a direct and specific, yet still gentle discussion of death in a Disney television movie. Or a Disney movie in general. The arc of this movie also could have easily focused on like avenging or writing Susie's death in some way, but instead its focus is taking care of loved ones and righting wrongs that affect them. This subliminally tells younger viewers that sometimes young people pass away too. And although that's heavy stuff, and I honestly would understand some parents being hesitant about that, I think it's kind of a good way for that concept to be introduced, in that her focus isn't like, I shouldn't have died. It's let me just take care of the people that I love and make sure that everything is right with them. It's very, very nuanced. Also, Zack and Susie are just fantastic Disney Channel heroes. If we just want to look at this through the lens of Disney Channel original movies, they're just doing such great stuff. Zack is giving some Troy Bolton vibes years and years before High School Musical. But also Justin Whalen and Amy Jo Johnson are giving deeply likable performances. His frustration with Susie's antics when, you know, she follows him to school to try to get his attention are always relatable. And he never verges on mean or overblown. And his moments of emotion over his father always, always rang true. His dynamic with Susie is just really enjoyable. It never dips into anything too unrealistically like romantic or cheesy in that way. And Susie, as a ghost, never feels like overly chaotic or troublemaking. She's just real and their dynamic is just real. Then we get into a bit what you talked about, Connor, which is there are some very real rules established about ghostdom in this. And we don't have like, you know, lore to tap into. They establish it all extremely clearly within the film. And I respect that a lot. This isn't just some willy-nilly, ghosts can communicate with us at any time, kids movie stuff. It's very carefully thought through. So Susie tells Zach that sometimes you need extra help to take care of your loved ones, explaining why she was able to come back to Earth from what she described as heaven. Susie only appears to Zach because he found her bracelet. So we've established a rule about a spirit being tied to a personal item, which I enjoy. And this concept also carries through consistently to the end of the film, which we'll get into because there's still a few things that I wonder about. Susie appears back on Earth in the outfit that she passed away in, establishing a very haunting concept of her spirit being a bit stuck in the day and moment of her death. After all, once she's accomplished what she has come to Earth to do, Johnny, in ghost form, pulls up on the bridge in the car that they died in. It's a little dark and sad, but I kind of love it, and it's just very haunting in general to see her still in that pink prom dress that we see her spending so much time getting ready in when she's still alive. Susie is also aware that her return to Earth is finite. She knows she is only there to right a wrong, and then she's done and she's going back. This is also what I'm assuming prevents her from saying, I love you, back to Zach before she returns to heaven. There's a very clear moment where she looks at him and you can tell she's deciding that she can't say it. She knows the rules of her return and doesn't try to bend them for any feelings that she might have developed for Zach. There are still some mysterious and mystifying parts of the ghostdom, and I don't think it's because they're unexplained. I think that's just the nature of ghost movies and why we enjoy them as well. So, for example, when Johnny pulls up to return Susie to heaven, he's very stoic and very unlike the Johnny that we see at the beginning of the film. He's kind of staring blankly ahead and just driving the car. Also, Susie's grandfather is also in the back of the car when she gets in. So do our souls just stick around with the people that we love who have also passed? You know, even though her grandfather didn't die with them in the car. But then I also wonder, okay, why is Susie so much herself while Johnny isn't? Is it because do you lose something of yourself when you go to heaven? Is it because she has feelings for Zach and not Johnny anymore? Very interesting to me. Which then brings me to Maggie. Maggie is also played by Amy Jo Johnson. She's the new girl at school in the final scene of the movie. One of Susie's catchphrases is jeepers. We hear Maggie say jeepers, and she turns around, and she looks exactly like Susie. So I guess Maggie, like I said, who looks and speaks exactly like Susie, but does not recognize Zach and introduces herself as if she had never met him, is somehow able to come into existence because Zach still has Susie's bracelet. She specifically tells him to keep it when she goes back to heaven. But what exactly is going on in that moment anyway? If Susie is reincarnated, wouldn't she need to like be reborn and have her soul start a new life all over again? Did her spirit take over the body of an existing girl, Maggie, who happens to look just like her? Or did Susie make her way back to heaven, plead her case for being with Zach, and get to come back to Earth the same age she was when she passed away? And she secretly actually does recognize Zach and know who she really is? Regardless of what these answers are.
Or is it a coincidence?
But she says jeepers, which is like her Susie's very 1950s phrase.
Could be a coincidence.
I tried to sit here and pick this apart and there's just no doing it. But what I have to say is, regardless of what these answers are, please tell me what other straight-to-television Disney movie has us asking these kinds of questions and honestly caring so much. I can't name one. So honestly, this rave is really about just me celebrating the quality of this movie. There's, like I said, so little to be found about the production of this, how it came to be, any reaction afterwards. It has fairly good reviews across any place where it does have reviews. People are pretty positive. The only note that people make is that there's maybe some, you know, classic corny Disney TV movie moments and the fact that her death is very graphic. But the sheer number of comments alone on YouTube versions of this movie proved to me it really does deserve to be on Disney Plus. I know it's not going to happen, but I do wish Disney would take a lesson from the huge success and celebration of bringing something like Brandy Cinderella to streaming. The fandom sizes are not anywhere near the same thing. Don't get me wrong. But 90s kid millennials who are now, you know, reaching 30, we cannot be stopped.
We remember shit. We lock it away.
Yes. We're like elephants. Adulthood is really hard for us right now, and we're craving a return to our childhood movies. Because a lot of them, Brandy, Cinderella, and Susie Q being two of them, were very sophisticated and were not pandering to us at all, so we can still actually enjoy them at this age. I'm assuming that one of the reasons that we clearly won't get Susie Q on Disney Plus is because of rights issues with the original production companies or the Super RTL Air channel, which is no longer tied to Disney. But, you know, I also wonder if there's a small chance that any of it has to do with content. Disney Plus now has TV-14 programming on it.
Yeah.
But I can't believe I'm saying this because I genuinely love this version, but how about a reboot? We can fix some of the slightly questionable early 90s content, which there is some in this that, because this is a rave, I'm just skipping over. There's just some things that do make me inwardly cringe. And maybe we could go a bit deeper and darker into the inspiration material of those teen tragedy songs. Because, wow, are those, like, rife with possibilities. I want more, more, more from that.
They could do, like, an Under Wraps situation that they just did with the Under Wraps sequel.
Yeah.
As a Disney Plus original movie.
Yeah.
I feel like this has potential as a Disney Plus original as opposed to a DCOM.
Especially because, and thank goodness anybody got them up on YouTube, but the quality is so low. I can barely even see the movie. I want to see it again. I want to see it clearly, and I would be okay with a reboot. Oh, it would be great. And it's just,
who would you cast?
Ooh, an unknown. An unknown for sure.
Or Florence Pugh.
Oh my God, if she would do it, friggin' forget it. Yes. But it's just, it's also such a joy to have a movie that deals with teen tragedy and death and ghosts that is both things, which is neither too deeply disturbing or full of jump scares and like dread that I can't watch it before I go to bed. But dare I say that this kind of story lives perfectly in a Disney Channel original movie kind of setting? It very well may be, because this is, like I said, a ghost movie that I can turn on and like go about my day without being completely disturbed or freaked out. But I also don't have to sit through another viewing of Halloween Town. Bless it, but I truly can't do it anymore. So I'm going to label this as a Halloween movie because it is when Disney Channel did air it. So the fact that a Halloween movie cannot be like pandery or whatever the epitome of that Halloween Town music is. it cannot be that. And it can have a ghost story that where the ghost isn't overly evil or frightening, or alternatively, too silly and childish and simply just there to be full of antics. They can be haunting, sad, lovable, and real. They can be Susie Q.
Yeah, as we've discussed this, I don't think I've seen Susie Q. I may have seen bits and pieces once, but I do not remember this film
I can't wait once we air this.
I looked up pictures while you were talking, and I was trying to jog my memory, and
I kid nothing. You not. You know, when we were in like fifth grade and it'd be the beginning of the school year and you had to fill out, what's my favorite book? I have something on it that says that my favorite movie is Susie Q.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was real for me. It was real. And I will say, too, I'm interested to see once we air this how many of you listening out there remember it, have a really strong connection to it, or literally never heard of it or saw it in your life. But I will say, I've seen it done. I think Zach and Susie would make a really great, like, throwback Halloween costume. All you need for Zach is just some 90s looking clothes and a basketball. And Susie has like a pink headband and her little, she eventually ends up ripping it up, but like a corset style pink 50s prom dress. It would be a great Halloween costume for a couple. I really hope that somebody does it. Maybe it'll be me next year. Stay tuned.
Probably.
But yeah, I just love that there was a connection between these two things and like establishing the rules of how you are a ghost and the fact that it's like you've got an arc when you're a ghost. You're not just there to be scary or just be plain benevolent or to cause problems. Like you earn it.
Yeah.
I like that.
I'm glad you chose to rave about something that has the ghost as a leading character as opposed to supporting, because I do feel like ghosts are typically relegated to supporting characters within Disney context. I mean, also in Star Wars as well. But
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think the moments when Disney does something as a ghost, as a main character, they're pretty few and far between. So it's interesting to see what they do when they sort of dive into it, which is, I think, one of my frustrations around the Haunted Mansion, in that it is a primed and ready, let's dive into some ghosts as the leading characters.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
never happens that way.
And I think I'm finding from us discussing both of these is I really do think like the key is really tying us to who they were when they were alive. Don't just have them appear as a ghost and explain. Show it to us. Then they matter.
My dad wrote a play about ghosts. And one of the first things we did, and I directed it, one of the first things we did is like we sat down, we had a conversation, we decided on like what are the rules of being a ghost, and you have to do that, otherwise it feels pandery, otherwise it feels cheap. This is the very Connor moment, but rules make things fun.
Yes, because at the end of Susie Q we avoid a classic decom moment of like, I love you now. She stares at him, they do kiss, but she looks at him and is like, she knows she can't say it. There's clearly,
it's more
some
complicated
rule
than this.
Yeah, there's clearly some rule about no love connections. Go back
rules
to heaven.
Rules make things fun, and complicated things are interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't always have to name the complications. You can just say that it's complicated.
Yes.
And
yes,
let the viewer spin out in their idea what makes it complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Because that creates literally an entire rave about a movie like you just did, where you're spinning out questions and things like that about a movie that gave you room to imagine all of those things. And that's
all in
that's
90,
what a good movie does.
A 90-minute Disney Channel original movie format. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, that's going to do it for us for this episode. Thank you all so much for listening to our spirit and ghost inspired episode for this Halloween. If you liked what you heard, please remember to hit follow or subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast, so all of our episodes download right to your device. You don't miss out on anything, especially with schedules being the way that they are right now and the possibility of inconsistencies of episode drops. Thank you for that. And please be sure to hit 5 stars and leave a review so other people can find the podcast. We're seen in search results. And so that you can give us some feedback about the things that you love about the episode so that we can make sure that we're doing more of the things you want to listen to. So thank you very much.
And thank you for those of us who are following us on social media. If you are not following us yet, you can find us at Poor Unfortunate Podcast on Instagram and Facebook and at Unfortunate Pod on Twitter. Honestly, especially Instagram, it's a very key part of this podcast experience because, as we explained, y'all voted on the categories from our last episode. I hope that you all will pop on there and tell us if you have seen Susie Q. Tell us about your opinions on Force Ghosts, the whole thing. Also, if you happen to order some Poor Unfortunate Podcast merch from our shop, please send us photos of you in it or of it, and we will feature it if you allow us.
Put it on your posts,
but please post about
it.
Yes. And honestly, just thank you for buying it, because who knows, maybe you'll wear it out and someone will say, what is Poor Unfortunate Podcast? And you can tell them. But if you want even more of this in your life, please pop over to our private Facebook group, the Poor Unfortunate Fam. Every time I bring it up, I say that we've got almost 100 members. We're so close to 100. Please pop over. I just want to reach 100 people because I love that number and I love that idea for us. So
yeah, come in, say hi.
Yeah, it's cool. A great way. Like I when I think about our listeners, I know so many of you by name now because you're in the fam and we talk about the episodes. And I feel like this is an especially, you know, this episode especially warrants some longer debate and discussion. And that is, you know, the Poor Unfortunate Fam is definitely the place for that.
And as we've mentioned, the merch shop is open. You can go to the Poor Unfortunate shop at our website, poorunfortunatepodcast.com/shop. You'll see all of the items right there. You can find all the things you like. If you have questions about anything, feel free to email us, give us a message on Instagram or the socials. We're happy to help. And as I always say, it does take us a little bit of money to keep the podcast up and running and coming to you. We do have a PayPal account. It's linked in our episode description and in the links in our social media accounts as well. Truly, anything that you have to spare goes a long way for us. It just keeps the podcast up and running, keeping it free, ad-free for the most part as well. You can make a one-time donation. You can make a monthly donation. It can be $1, $5, $10, more than that, it all just goes right back into the podcast so that we can keep bringing you some Disney content that you love to listen to. So thank you very much for considering that. If you're unable to make a donation, that's totally fine. Tell a friend, tell your family, tell an enemy, tell people, you know, tell people what you listen to because they want to be like you because you're cool.
Yeah.
I said so. I don't know. Happy Halloween, everyone. Happy Halloween, Caroline.
Happy Halloween, Connor. Our favorite time of year, spooky season's done. Time is moving fast.
Spooky season is done and the Christmas music begins.
Here we go. Yeah.
All right. Happy Halloween. And until next time,
Beluga Sevruga.